everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing new ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. My two assistants and co-hosts and engineers, Ben Starr and Julian Joy Yellow.
Hey there.
Good to be back.
Here we are, continuing with our thinking about thinking. So we were trying to define what is thinking. And we're going to break this down to, you know, there are three possible modes of thinking. This is one way of looking at it. One is called pathological thinking. Another is called logical thinking. And the last one, for want of a better word, we're going to call psychological thinking. Now, pathological thinking does not see itself. When it starts to see itself, it dissolves, like a witch in water. Pathological thinking is mixed with emotion, and it is unrecognized emotion that directs it. Pathological thinking is what most people do when they think that they're thinking. But what we're doing is they're thinking based on some kind of emotion. We're going to go more into that. Logical thinking is another one. That's another kind. That's the one that works without emotion. It works by comparison, yes, no, either, or. It looks for conclusion, decision-making, no emotion involved at all. Psychological thinking is intellect in harmony with emotion and in harmony with emotions. It's aware of itself. When the awareness vanishes, so does the cooperation of thought and feelings. Thought then to become logical, pathological, or disappears entirely. Psychological thinking can be inductive or deductive. We're going to go more into that as well, and then we're going to talk about how can you train your mind to work more efficiently. Let's take a look at this pathological thought.
Well, Armand, according to some of the stuff that I've read and research that I've done, pathological thought is sort of unaware of itself. It doesn't see itself. It can't see other types of thought. And it's used to talk about thinking that's kind of thrown out of balance by emotion. So the emotion not necessarily being negative, but anger or jealousy, emotions like that, could be some examples of emotions that come into that thought.
So a good example of a pathological thought would be, hey, would you, could you give me cab fare? And somebody says, I don't have the cab fare. And you say, you're always stingy with your money. Now, a whole bunch of things took place, and now the thought and the argument takes place around an issue that's not an issue. Something else is going on. The very fact that you were feeling powerless or vulnerable or whatever it is, or trying to get the person to prove that they love you. Like you say, been jealousy.
Right.
Also, been jealousy. Been jealousy. I like the way those two went together. So jealousy is pathological thought. It doesn't mean you're crazy to think it. It's just that you have no idea what you're doing when you think it.
Right.
You think you're thinking, I'm really jealous, it's really her that's a threat, it's really this problem that I have to worry about. But it's not the problem. The problem is there's an emotion underneath it that you don't want to feel.
And that's the overriding factor. The underwriting factor. And the emotions aren't always necessarily negative, but that's just the most obvious example, something like anger or jealousy or stress or anxiety, underwriting, as you say, the thought. So, I mean, pathological thinking is something that we all have had to deal with, and probably the best way to deal with someone who's expressing a pathological thought is to just listen patiently and not respond in kind. So listen patiently and without mirroring their communication.
Because it's a trap.
Yeah.
A pathological thought is an invitation to dance.
It's an invitation to battle.
Right, yeah. Which is that kind of a dance. Yeah. So in other words, someone says to you, you know, you wore that shirt, you're wearing blue to disturb me. Well, you know they're being crazy. You know if they get upset with you about cab fare, there's something going on. But if you get involved in that argument, it means something. Now, my belief is that pathological thought is an invitation, usually for two people to get stirred into something, and my bet is always that it's two people who have gotten too close, just as an offside. Most of the people who have ever come into therapy, who have come to see me as couples, they come in because they have a problem that they're facing. So they say, Julian, you know, they'll say, we have this problem. He's been flirting with a girl downstairs. And I ask them, before that happened, was there ever a moment when they felt closer together than they've ever felt before? And the answer is always yes. So what happens with pathological thought is when two people feel really close, they get very vulnerable, then somebody throws a little bait in the water, and somebody sees who bites it. And then if somebody bites it, now if only one person bites it, it's no issue. But if two people bite it back and forth, then you've got this thing that could actually wind up destroying the closeness.
So how do you end up being aware of this, that you're doing that? If you're not aware of the emotion and how it's running you, how do you stay aware of it?
Well, that's the point. You got to look for nervousness. Nervousness is the only thing. If you're not aware of the emotion, Julian, you got to just check on your nervousness. Am I feeling nervous? Am I feeling nervous while I'm talking? The issues are never real when they come from nervousness. There's always this sense of panic underneath.
And I love the bait metaphor, because earlier when you described it as an invitation to dance, in my head I thought, there's so many examples of when people are fishing for a confrontation or a conflict, whether it's a close romantic or family relationship.
Right, it could be loaded, right.
Yeah, there's people who, for whatever reason, they're in a mood where they're fishing for a scenario.
Do I look fat in this dress?
Exactly. Man? Exactly.
Right. The last dress I put on, I did. Okay, so yes, there's a beginning right there. That's a common, nice, easy statement. Sounds innocent. How many times have you guys been baited by a question that sounded innocent, but something in the back of your head said, I better not answer this. This isn't going to go anywhere. You could have had it with parents. You could have had it with lovers. You rarely get it from your children. Children rarely trick parents into negative feelings, but parents often trigger the children.
I agree with that. There's, as you said, there's so many times where someone could ask you a question that just feels like such a loaded question that you wonder to yourself, what positive, constructive result can come out of me saying anything?
So one wonders where this comes from. Where does pathological thinking come from? And according to quite a bit of research and the mindful people, it's all the avoidance of emotion, the avoidance of pain. The person most likely to have pathological thought is the person who is most avoiding feeling bad. By the way, I was looking at the house of Robin Williams is for sale, right? Mm-hmm. So his house is for sale, and in his bedroom, it has written in Italian, always smiling. You see, it was the very smile that made him wind up committing suicide. His smile was the greatest pathology right there. His refusal to feel. Because he smiled. He tried to smile through everything, right? And that's what people do. So trying to smile through everything very often will be a way that you're keeping your trigger on edge, and at any point it could come and get you. So pathological thinking is the kind of thinking that results from the avoidance of some emotion that you have on the inside. And if you want to talk to us about this today, you can call us at 212-957-2729. That's 212-957-2729. We will take your calls today. So that's the beginning. That's pathological thinking. I hope that part is clear. Is there any question about that? Pathological thinking. We call it pathological because it is based on a denied feeling. You could be angry, but mostly it's nervousness.
So it's actually based off of the feeling that you're denying,
right,
is what's coming out.
It may come out in a backward kind of way, Julian. Mm. It could come out from the other side. Like, for example, let's say you're feeling sad, but you don't want to feel sad. So instead you pick a fight with somebody. You yell at your kids. Well, it's coming out of there, but it's hard to identify it. It's hard to find it. Because one of the rules about pathological thinking is the minute you spot it, it disappears. Its path disappears. It's like smoke. You know, so as soon as it appears, as soon as you notice it, if you say, I'm being crazy, it goes away and another thought comes up instead. I have a friend who was talking about having this argument with his girlfriend, and he's got this argument with his girlfriend over some issue like the cab fare, you know, and it's some small thing like that. And then as soon as he saw that, he said, here, take the money, please, let's not argue about that. Another issue, but you always have the keys to the house, or, you know, you always have this, or you always that. And you could tell that the baiting is happening. It's meant to happen. Let's say, hey, we've got somebody calling in right away. Let's try to grab one quick, fast. This is 212-957-2729. Hang on a second. Hi, this is Armand DeMille on the air.
Hello, Dr. Amir. Troy from the Bronx.
Hello, Troy from the Bronx.
Regarding, by the way, thank you for recommending Wenichi Webb by Yablon.
Oh, really, my God. It. Did you read it?
Yes, sir. It's still with me. It's still governing my dynamic. Please, regarding the pathological thinking, I have a situation where I'm African-American, terribly violent upbringing. There is a situation where I go crazy and bring up all the history with someone before I break up with them, whether they're members of my family, friends who I used to date or have intimacies with. But if there is I create these history files on people, and I literally explode from a historical perspective. My sister asked me once, I'm 51 and she's 55, she asked me once, when did she ever mistreat me? By the time I got to President Gerald Ford, she had asked me to stop because of the record being so accurate about her mistreatment of me. And I want to know, are those what are called scenes in psychoanalysis or the pathological thinking, and just how destructive is it for me?
Well, you know, the truth of it is, look how smart you are. Let's look at it from the other place. You know, what a smart thing to do. You're storing up your weaponry. You know, you're somebody who feels that at some point he's going to be powerless, and he wants to have weapons that he could use. So you take your weapons and you store them up. It's like you're putting like a squirrel. You know, you're just saving your ammunition for when you need it. Now, this is on one level, right? And, of course, it's hard to fight. Now, of course, you could do that with me, and I would say, oh, no, I don't buy anything from the past. I just want to deal with now. And you would be powerless with me, but you do it and save it for people who are vulnerable to that. Well, okay. It may be dirty fighting, but it's fighting. It's your way of doing it. Now, what would you rather do? How would you prefer to be?
Honestly, I prefer to be in a society that never negated my existence and therefore feel part of a culture that really, really embraced me rather than negated me because I'm a gay black male who happens to love church. I mean, it's just one of those things. But since that is not the case, and since I'm still being profiled on one level or another, and because of the poverty and abject poverty that I endure growing up, it's just that I can't be that person. I can't be that part of society that is not suffering the way I'm suffering. But in this case, I would like to be less vulnerable.
Let me ask you something. Who was the evidence gatherer in your family? Who was it that held you up to trial? I suspect either your mother or your father had you account for yourself. Which one was more likely to kind of stand you up and say, okay, now tell me the truth. What happened?
Sir, I am the youngest of 8 children. My father and mother divorced by the time I was 4. I used to faint whenever I would see a black man because my father was so violent. The idea of my mother even asking me what flavor ice cream I desired just never occurred. I raised myself along with 2 nieces and a nephew. It just was never. I was the governing person. I'm the one that had to
myself. How did you get by so young without being taken away to an orphanage?
Now, that is a good question, and often I ask myself that question, but I had a sister. she's gone now through breast cancer, but she was 19 years older than me. And she kind of took over because my mother endured alcoholism and got sober by eighth grade for me.
Okay, so Troy, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. If your sister took over for your mom and brought you up, she must have taught you how to behave in a way that you could not get, that you would not be taken away. She must have told you what to do. She must have told you how to talk, how to be.
She did give me the language to be able to talk, because I didn't speak until the age of seven. She did give me a way to express myself, and she was very creative.
So somewhere
yeah,
in your life,
I give her a lot of credit.
So Troy, thank you. Somewhere in
thank
the age
you.
Between zero and seven, Troy was mute.
Yes, sir.
Now
my mother used to joke about it because then I started talking too much.
Yeah. Okay. So now stop a sec. Stop a sec.
Doctor, you're
what does mm-hmm. what does a mute boy do with his mind from age zero to seven? He accumulates thought.
Oh.
You learned early on to accumulate the thought just in case. So you learned a weapon of remembering things, memorizing mm-hmm. things, accumulating things, categorizing things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing my family always says. Call Junior. He remembers everything, and that's what they call me. But I do remember everything. That's like an ironclad mind.
So when your family says, Joy, when your family says, call Junior, he remembers everything, they're admiring you, right?
Only then.
Right. And back then, who was it that was saying call Junior? Would Mom say call Junior?
Never my mom, but one of my sisters or brothers, and because we have a family reunion in North Carolina, and they want to know who's who, one of my cousins might call, and they'll say, oh, we all know that you would know. Yeah, and so I need to, like, I know where the family's buried in North Carolina, so they'll tell me to wait till I get there to show them where everybody's buried, things
okay,
like
Troy,
that.
So, Troy, from age zero to seven, you are mute because you know that you're afraid to open your mouth because there's too many consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And meanwhile, you're collecting information. At the same time as you're collecting information, you notice that because you have the information available in your mind, you're admired and given some status by your brothers mm-hmm. and sisters.
Mm-hmm.
Your parents aren't around. Your mother and father aren't around there to take care of you. But your substitute parents are loving you for
mm-hmm.
your mind being able to do this. It is little wonder that your mind doesn't utilize this tool in its arguments when it feels scared and when you feel frail. Of course you do.
Excellent. Yes, yes.
You know, I now, see. The only other thing I would say to you is the only difference between those arguments and your letting it be is a tear. I'm willing to bet that at some point, Troy, you feel like crying. And when you feel like crying, instead what you do is you come out with a barrage of accumulated evidence. And
that's
very
true.
Yeah.
Exceptionally true, yeah.
Yeah, so even now, there's a tear that's inside you that almost wants to manifest because somebody is listening.
But here's the question, Doctor. I'm always crying. I really wonder if there's ever a time when I'm not crying. Literally, I can be asleep and wake up and my pillow's wet with tears.
Sure.
I'm very happy now because I don't want to be bothered with anybody. I'm very happy.
Mm-hmm.
But even after being laid off from Wall Street, I'm made even more happier. But I literally cry all the time. And I'm okay with that because I just think that's part of me. I don't mind. But I like laughing too, but as far as feeling that lack of emotional expression,
well, I bet you have fewer arguments.
I'm all over.
Yeah, I bet you have fewer arguments. Congratulations on being able to do that.
Very true. And I thank you, Doctor, because I can't tell you how blessed by God I am that you exist. Really, you helped me in my story of deliverance. Thank you, Doctor.
Sure, Troy. Okay, thanks for calling
in. Take care. Bye-bye.
So you see how the story builds? So as a kid, you have to have a strategy. What's your strategy going to be? I'll be quiet. I'll observe. Right? There's a good strategy. I'll react. I'll get angry. I'll run away. These are the different strategies that people have. Troy had a strategy from zero to seven, keep quiet. But just don't keep quiet, because if you keep quiet, you'll get buried. Keep quiet and accumulate information that you could use at a later time if you need to. pretty smart folks we are, we humans. But that's the pathological talk that you're talking about. And then that turns into a kind of a logical thought. Second kind of thought is logical thinking. It's not as common as it might seem at first glance. In general, we think logically only when we're presented with some difficulty. If you would answer the question, what is 2 plus 2? You'll say 4. Quite probably we do not think logically. We don't think at all. We simply retrieve pre-established information. Logical thought is simple. It's very simple. Logical thinking is a process that requires some attention to be directed at each step of the process. When a step is skipped, it has been filled by some assumption, desire, or fantasy. Logic is like finding one's way through a maze.
Yeah, it's balancing and weighing possibilities and choices against each other. So if I have a finite amount of time in my day, how do I allocate that time? How do I prioritize the things that I have to do versus the things that I want to do versus the things that I need to do and get everything done in a small time period? That's, to me, that's a good example of logical thinking. Computers are an example of something that's running logical thought all the time.
Yeah, I mean, computers are the manifestation of us taking our logical thought and making it a tool. And they're capable of piecing together pieces of thought to create new pathways, but that is basically as close as they come to thought. Because computers, obviously, are not human. They don't have that thought that we do. But they have no attention to things like
humans.
Well,
you know, it's
a
funny thing you say that, because Siri, you should pardon the expression, S-I-R-I, when I ask Siri a question, it comes up with, I could ask it a question like what evidence do we have that the Earth is round? It will come up with, well, here are some of the solutions I found for you.
If you give it a direction, it can answer it.
If you give it any direction, it will answer a question for you.
But it doesn't have the ability to understand importance of things. It lacks scale and lacks hierarchical ordering by quality. So quality is what we lose from that. So we have the pathological thinking, which values quality or values the importance or the emotion. And then we have logical thinking, which kind of loses that, but with a direction, it can give you an answer.
So the final kind of thinking, thank you, Julian. The final kind of thinking is called, well, we'll call it psychological thinking. In psychological thinking, you have to see yourself. Psychological thinking is self-evaluating. It's progression by reflection. It has a goal, understanding, and it helps you step into the light of that goal. Psychological thinking is asking yourself, am I present when this is going on? What am I feeling while this is going on? What is happening to me emotionally at this moment? What's happening to me physically at this moment? As I ask you this question, as you're listening right now, are you listening just with your ears, or are you feeling something on the inside as well?
So it's sort of like the awareness of the present, like taking these two emotional and logical things and allowing them to combine and understand the present moment.
Well, what you need to do, though, is you have to unmask the illusions of the first one, of the pathological thought. You see, the pathological thought, it's what everybody does, Julian. It's like it's what everybody who comes to see me. They come in and they ask, what's wrong with me? Here is what's going on in my mind. And what happens is once your mind gets into a loop to protect you from feeling something, let's say you feel sad. Let's say you feel abandoned. And you feel sad and you feel alone in the world. Then you become paranoid. Now, what's paranoid thinking? Paranoid thinking is blaming everybody for everything. So what you do is you have all this paranoid thinking and you have this, it's their fault, it's their fault, it's their fault. As you keep thinking it, it keeps burning off this energy so that you don't feel the fear. So whereas you're frightened, now you have a paranoid thought and they balance each other out. Now, the paranoid thought, therefore, gets reinforced because it makes you feel calm. So every time you get a little more nervous, you have another paranoid thought. And by paranoid thought, I mean persecutory thoughts. Somebody is talking about you. Somebody wants to do something to you.
Like an unrealistic threat.
Unrealistic threat. A threat that's not there. Like a phantom phone ring. What's a phantom phone ring?
Well, it goes back to what we talked about last week about people who are sort of addicted to their phones.
So they have a phone vibration. You actually
they feel vibrations in their legs.
You feel the vibration even when you don't even have the phone.
Yeah, they're so looking forward to that phone notification that they manifested in their heads.
So when you get to the point where you're beginning to have this psychological thought, you have to ask yourself a question. The question becomes, how do I get myself to the place where my thoughts are working for me rather than against me? Most people's logical thought works for them. How do I get from step A to step B? How do I get down the street? How do I go downstairs? How do I buy this thing? That's logical thought.
But we can't just choose the logical one. Because if we go just logical, what happens when you choose just to live your life logically? Because I have a friend
Siri.
Who does that. And you become Siri.
You become Siri. They call it serious. You have a friend who does that, Julian?
I do, and he felt so deep. He's a physicist and a mathematician, and he dedicated his life to math and physics. And so his way of thinking became so hyper-logical that he felt like he could never feel an emotion again. Hmm. And he got so deep into that, he became extremely depressed.
It's an interesting thing because the depression will actually bail you out of it. Mm-hmm. So you sink down.
Yeah, he would depress, and that would be the only time he felt anything because he was so emotional about his situation that he would finally feel an emotion. But
yeah, so he got underneath it. He got underneath it through the depression.
Yeah.
Sometimes depression is a gift. Sometimes depression is helping you re-feel what you've turned yourself off.
Right.
You know, a lot of people I know who are turned off in their bodies and in their sexually, or the depression actually brings them back to life if you could grab it. But sometimes depression also turns into a kind of a solid state, and you become absolutely depressed, and so depressed that you can feel nothing at all. We're going to be taking a short break. When we do take our break, when we come back, we will take the rest of these phone calls that are up here. But we're going to be talking about mindful meditation, mindfulness, the value of and the not-so-value of mindful stuff. An article in the New York Times by Carl Richards where he addresses, yesterday I think it was, he was talking about telling himself a story. He was saying about how many stories he tells himself over and over again. He repeats them to himself like he says he has to own every new book. Every time he sees a book, he's got to order it online. He's got to get it through Amazon. He's got to get this book. And he has all these books sitting around his house that he hasn't used. Then what he does is he tries to bring his consciousness to it and say, no, I'm going to postpone buying any books. But what happens when he postpones buying the books is that goes on for a good period of time until he finds himself automatically buying those books all over again. How can he get that to work? So he addresses this issue of how you can become just a little happier by somehow using mindful meditation. And he says, if you could, he talks about a study by Tobias and Grinberg, which they discovered that postponing the onset of a decision can save about 50 milliseconds, enabling the brain to focus attention on the more relevant information.
So there's like a sort of like primal impulse right in the beginning
that
you
need to
make past.
And if you could bypass the primal impulse, and we're going to have to talk about that when we come back, because if it was that simple, everybody would be doing it. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to be right back.
Thank you.
212-957-2729. 212-957-2729. We're talking about this concept of mindfulness. If it is so simple, my friends, to just stop responding to crazy thought, right, what they call monkey brain. So crazy thought is you're feeling something and you're just blurting it out of your mouth and you start saying stuff that even you don't believe, like you're always insensitive to me. And then the person responds to it, I'm not insensitive to you. Yes, you are insensitive. And the two of you are talking about something that has nothing to do with anything. And you wonder who started this in the first place. Why did I even start this argument? Why would I even be in the middle of this? Why did I ask for the cab fare? You know what I mean? Why? What was going on? What brought that moment about? What made me nervous on the way out the door? Why did this get started? Well, let's say it's a couple who's separating. And as they're separating, the separation itself, after being so close, may have led to some kind of feeling that was a bad feeling, like I'm leaving you. And then you have a fight on the way out the door. So what we would do if you were being mindful is you would be aware of the fact that there's an energetic charge to it. And if it has an energetic charge, it gets you to observe the energetic charge and reduce it. But it sounds simple.
It's not simple. It's easier said than done.
Exactly.
Because it requires perspective and total self-honesty. So, I mean, you can lie to people around you, but at the end of the day, it's a lot harder to lie to yourself. Yet it requires sort of breaking through those self-delusions and self-illusions.
Yeah, I see a lot of my pathological conflict coming from like a stubbornness that kind of builds up.
Once you get there, you're absolutely right.
And it's honestly, I'll be aware of it, and I'm like, okay, I know I'm being stubborn, but I still say it. I still go out and I say it, and then I start a fight about it, and it's so difficult.
And as you start the fight, it gets deeper and deeper, and it gets more.
And you have to stick to your guns, right? Because you just
because you don't have a choice.
That's it.
See, now if you did have a choice, we would be able to get all children to pay attention in school. But children somehow are fired in such a way that they know their mind has got to take them away from where they are. They can't sit still. They're too restless. So if they act out in some kind of way, what the average teacher will do is try to restrict them. Now you try to restrict them and they sit there. What do you think happens to a child when a child is sitting in a room, constricted, not allowed to move, and being told that they're wrong for everything they feel? What do you think happens to that poor mind? Well, that kid's just going to lie. All right, I'll lie about it. I'll make believe I'm paying attention. So mindfulness becomes something that looks like you're focusing. You look like it sounds like an easy thing to do. A lot of people promote mindfulness as a way of mental health. But by the time you could even call it mindfulness, you no longer need it. You're already there. Are there any dangers to mindfulness? That's a question. But first, let's talk to Sophie. Hi, Sophie from Toronto.
Yes.
Hi there. How are you? Nice to speak with you.
Nice to talk to you. So I'm calling you because you were talking about always smiling, written at Robin Williams' bedroom. And, I'm married into a family always smiling. I come from a family that we used to talk and solve our issues and talk through things. And, then I changed country and I married into this family that they don't talk about things. I have a big difficulty with that.
I'm sure they don't talk about difficult things. Is that what you're saying, Sophie?
Yes. They pretend everything is okay. But I feel that and of course, when you're the stranger in the new group, you try to act like the new group to be accepted. And in my case, I started to... it started to build up inside me because I'm used to express myself and I was used to express myself and say what I think, and then I find myself in this new situation where the rule is to pretend everything it's okay.
Sophie, tell me yourself. What are one of the things that you have the greatest pain with besides the way they are? How do you feel being in this family? Did it work out? Did you have the, did the plan work? Where are you from? Are you from Russia?
No, I'm from Brazil.
You're from Brazil. Okay. Did the plan work? Did it work? Well, did you get married to someone and say...
It worked with my husband because we talk about things, but...
But he doesn't talk with his family.
Now a bit more, but the dynamics, I think, it's still the same.
Yeah, so you see, you've got a problem.
I find myself having conversations with people in my head and telling them what I wanted to tell them.
So, for example, give me an example of that. What would you say to his mother?
For instance, of course, I'm an educated person, but it's hard to find a job in my level here. So there is always the issue about, are you working? What are you doing? And or people talking about my skin color, and I cannot react. It's tough.
And what would they say about your skin color?
I'm from an Italian family that immigrated to Brazil, so I'm Caucasian. But for them, the fact that I'm Brazilian implicates that I'm not.
Uh-huh. So therefore, they are critical of you?
Yes.
So what a scary
thing. I don't feel accepted at all, if that's your question.
Yeah, so you're very angry.
I'm hurt more than angry.
Yeah. And you see, here's the problem.
You know, when you try to do everything, and it's never enough.
See, here's the problem. Where you stand right now, let's talk about the psychopathological brain. Where you stand right now, Sophie, you want your husband to join you in understanding the way you feel. So you will try to explain to him what's wrong.
Yes.
He, in order to do that, would have to betray his family. So he is caught in the middle of this. So now you're more alone than ever because now you can't get him to join you in this kind of feeling. He's showing his loyalty back to his family somewhat.
Yes, and so I don't want to put him in this position.
It's a terrible position for both of you to be in.
Yes.
Do you have anybody like me in your life?
I had, but I could not trust 100%, so I thought it was meaningless in the end.
So you couldn't trust the person who was like a therapist in your life?
The psychiatrist.
You couldn't trust the psychiatrist. So what did the psychiatrist did that made him untrustworthy or her?
To make it plain, I felt some judgment. So I could not.
They were critical of you.
I would always go like 60% and never 100%.
And they would judge you and be critical of you as well.
Yes.
That's very tough.
And I heard from him, when you want to talk about something, and that, no, get over that and let's go to the next thing. And
Sophie,
if I would be over that, I wouldn't be talking about it.
Sophie, it's such a lonely world up there.
It is.
Not only don't you have Brazil in your family, you don't even have a psychiatrist, and you don't have your husband, and you don't have a family of your own.
I'm very isolated. Yes.
I hear. So listen, you're in Toronto. How about even phone conversations? I have people here who could talk to you by phone that would make you feel very different.
Okay.
You know, do you ever get down to New York ever?
Not yet. I mean to.
Mm-hmm. Well, if so, one day I would like to meet with you myself. And maybe help you through this. But also, there may be stuff that we could do by phone, by telephone, which I find...
Well, listening to you helped me already.
Good. And do you know there are the archives?
And it is helpful.
You know, there are the archives you could listen to. There are thousands of programs on the air. You know, on the website.
I assure you it helped me through difficult patches a few times.
Sophie, if you ever need a little more help, feel free to call, okay?
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure. Okay. So being isolated, there you are, you're trapped. And you're trapped, suddenly you're alone. Now you're alone, double alone. Sophie doesn't have a family from Brazil. Then on top of not having a family from Brazil, she has an alienated family in Toronto, right, who is against her, who deal with things differently. They tell her to get over stuff because she's obviously deeply emotional and they don't want to hear it. Then she tries to get her husband to join her. in this and to be in some way her ally, and she can't get that either. So Sophie gets stuck in this position, and it's a tough place. Then she goes to a psychiatrist who tells her, get over it. Obviously, a psychiatrist who's saying, this is something that took place when you were younger, and we could take care of this now. One of the approaches we have is get over it. Well, that kind of works sometimes.
It's tough when you're halfway around the world from where you grew up.
Yeah, it is. That is exactly right, Ben.
You grew up in sunny Brazil, and now you're in chilly Toronto, and that can't be easy.
212-957-2729. Sunny Brazil, chilly Santiago. Okay. 212-957-2729. So she brings up a very, very important question, which is, I couldn't trust the psychiatrist because the psychiatrist judged me. Here's a bunch of questions I'm going to ask you to write down that maybe you could put on your wall. Can I trust you? There's a good question. Imagine if you wrote on a big piece of paper, can I trust you? And you just had it somewhere in your house on a wall on an 8x10 piece of paper. And can I trust you, meaning can you trust anyone you love? Can I trust you? Second question is, can you trust me? Meaning, should you trust me? Can you trust me? Will you trust me? I'll be trustworthy. But the third one is, should I trust you? Maybe I've chosen the wrong person to trust. Maybe I've chosen somebody who I will be trusting until she gets to a point where she gets fed up, and then all of a sudden she does something harmful. Should I trust you? Maybe you're the wrong person. Maybe I've picked the wrong person for the wrong thing. And then again, should you trust me? Maybe I'm the wrong person. Maybe I don't want a relationship. Maybe I'm about to do something destructive or harmful to you as well. So can I trust you? Can you trust me? Should I trust you? Should you trust me? And then here comes the big one. Do I trust myself? Now, what does that mean, do I trust myself? 212, by the way, 957-2729 is our number. 212-957-2729. Do I trust myself? Am I sure that at some point I'm not going to get wacky brained? And that means at some point am I going to get nervous or have those feelings like you were talking about before and have this kind of pathological brain come up? Am I going to be one of these guys who are going to come up and suddenly be able to just do something harmful?
It's the biggest one of all by far.
To you.
To me on that list.
Can I trust myself?
Yeah, do I trust myself? I mean, it goes back to mindfulness and self-honesty and psychological thinking and awareness.
What parts about yourself don't you trust? Name one.
Decision-making at times. I don't always trust my own decision-making.
Because your decision-making very often is based on what?
Impulse.
Mm-hmm. An impulse-based, here we go again, it's a good question if you don't mind Ben taking this trip with me. The impulse is based on either fear, right? Or pleasure.
Right.
So let's say, can you make a decision based on either fear or pleasure?
Sure.
Okay, so if it's based on fear, it would be avoidant.
Right.
Right? I'll quit that job.
But the pleasure could also be avoidant. I don't want to be in myself right now, so I'll have a drink. Or whatever the case may be.
So easily addictive stuff or stuff that could be that you don't want to be doing.
Right.
Could easily move you to. So you don't trust yourself. You know, you just kind of...
I'm working on it, but I mean, my decision-making in the past has at times let me down, so...
Absolutely. Yeah. And you know what you just said, I'm working on it, as if you think I was saying, oh, that's... You should be better than that. No, it's amazing that you could see it.
Yeah.
Amazing that you could see it. Hey, we've got Pierre on the line. Hey, Pierre, this is Armand DeMille.
Oh, sir, it's a pleasure speaking to you.
Nice to talk to you, too.
I just, speaking about not trusting yourself and, you know, making decisions off of just pure impulse. My issue would be, I guess, with my girlfriend. I've been dating her for about 2.5 years now. But cheating, you know, it's always a problem with cheating. I guess you could say, you have the power, you know, to go or whether or not to go or to answer the phone or the text or whatever. But I want to know why. Like, why do I, being happy, being in love, or being, you know, I guess, in a way, satisfied, why do I always run back to the same course? Or my impulse is just, as I'm telling myself, no, I'm not going to go, I'm heading exactly there. So I guess my question is, what type of, like, process thinking is that?
So are you talking about, I'm sorry, Pierre, are you talking about at times you find yourself deeply in this relationship, but you find yourself attracted to somebody else?
Not really attracted to someone else, just, I guess, to satisfy me. Like, why do I feel so unsatisfied when I know I'm in love, when I know I have this compassion for someone else?
Good. When you were a kid, did you have a safety in your family where you felt you were safe ever?
No.
There's your answer. When you were a child, you never felt safe. So now, let's talk about why you were not safe as a child. What was the environment?
I'm sorry to bring you there, but...
Yeah, no dad.
My mother was abusive.
Did she hit you, or was she abusive verbally?
Both.
Both, okay. So mom was a tyrant. How many kids in the family?
Five kids in total.
See, she's trying to control all five without a father there, and she's doing it using some combination of terror. You know, she's going to yell at you, scream at you, or hit you to control you guys. What position did you have in the family? Were you the second to the youngest?
I was the second oldest.
Second oldest. Okay, as the second oldest, you had an older child. Was that a brother or a sister?
She's an older sister.
An older sister. How did she treat you?
She was, I guess you could say, I replaced her as my mom mentally.
Yes,
I thought of her as a mother figure.
So she was loving in her own way?
Yes.
She was loving, but your mom was not. See, you weren't safe.
No, not as, I guess, not as much as I would like to be.
So here comes the question, what happens is, in love, one of the things that happens is you open this door to vulnerability. Vulnerability meaning that when you have somebody you care about, you become like a child who is feeling this safety factor or this open factor. But for you, there was never any safety in that. It was dangerous. Therefore, whenever you are in love and you should be satisfied, instead you become vulnerable. And when you become vulnerable, that makes you want to get up and run. That makes a lot of sense to me. This will change over time. For over a little time, you'll find it. You'll pick better mates, you know, and eventually over time, you'll be able to feel better about yourself. Now, who are you currently with?
I'm currently with my girlfriend. Not at the present time, but I'm with her.
You say not at the present time. You mean you're already separated from her?
No, not physically. Like, she's not here with me.
Okay. And tell me the best thing about her.
The best thing about her, I guess...
Yeah, give me a quality.
She could, the way she makes me feel secure, a sense of security.
She does give you a sense of security, right? That sense of security you didn't have when you were a kid.
No. Right?
Is she like your older sister? Your girlfriend?
In a sense, yeah. Okay. I could definitely say that.
Okay, so I see just now you had an insight into something. See, it just dawned on you. You said, hey, you know, she is like my older sister. How is she like your older sister?
By giving me that sense of security.
And what else?
Giving me that...
that spot of joy, of happiness, of where I look forward to or being, just being happy and total. She gives me happiness.
So wouldn't it make sense that if somebody gave you that kind of happiness, you'd be grateful? But the trouble with it is, if when she gives you that kind of thing, it makes you angry at the people who should have given it to you in the first place, which was your mother. It opens the door to your anger, you see? Getting and receiving the kind of love that you got from an older sister opens the door to, why didn't you get it from your mother? Why didn't she love you better? And where was your dad anyway? Not an easy life, Pierre, you know, not easy to start with. But here's the beauty of it. Two things are beautiful about the way you are. One is you have a nice name. Three things, all right? I like Pierre. So you have a nice name. I'm Armand. Armand's a nice name, too. Armand and Pierre, nice. Sound like we, the two of us should open up a bakery. Armand and Pierre.
Right? I would love to.
Right. So imagine... Imagine, Pierre, we got one thing going is we got your name going. Number two we have going for you is that you are somebody who's aware of the fact that he gets funny when he's in love. Therefore, that's a very big thing. That means you could love a little more. Number three, what's really beautiful about you as well in this is that you're listening to this program. And in listening to this program, that means you're asking yourself for further information about how you can grow. That's fabulous stuff. All three of those mean that you've got nothing except a future of more understanding and more loving. So I look forward to what's to come next. The past may have been painful. The future will be less painful.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thanks for calling in, Pierre.
Thank you, sir. I really appreciate it.
Sure. Pierre and Armand's Bakery. I like that. I'd like to bake bread.
I would buy your bread.
Buy my bread. Yeah. I make a good... I don't know how to make bread. Do you know how to make bread? Do you ever make bread?
No, I haven't, actually.
Have you made bread, Ben?
Never.
Three guys who never made bread. This could be another store. We got to take a short. We got to leave you now. We will be back tomorrow with Linda Vanella, of course, and we're going to be talking more about mindful meditation, some of the hazards of mindful meditation. Remember, do I trust myself? We'll be back with you tomorrow at 1 p.m., my friends.
And make sure to check out the archives at thepositivemind.com. And with any questions or contact Armand at thepositivemind.com by email. Hiri hiri